is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont has placed itself at the forefront of the national conversation about marijuana legalization. If legalization were to pass this session, Vermont would be the first state to go in favor of legalizing pot, rather than leaving it up to a popular referendum. It would be the legislature deciding. It seemed like smooth sailing for the pro-legalization movement after a bill passed the state Senate that would have created a regulated market for marijuana. But then the House took up the issue, and it's gone all over the place since then. One committee suggested a study committee and no legalization. Another committee has put forward the idea of a legal license to grow two plants at home, but no regulated marketplace and no ability to legally sell the product. And whether or not any bill can get through the full House and get merged with the Senate bill in an acceptable way remains to be seen. Today, we're going to update you on where the legislation stands and talk about the arguments against and in favor. I'm joined by Matt Simon, New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project, and Debbie Haskins, executive director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont. Thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let me just summarize a little bit of where this legislation has been going, and then we can move on from there. So the Senate, as I said, passed a bill that would legalize the consumption and regulate the sale of small amounts of marijuana with certain things like edibles prohibited. A House committee first looked like it was going to pass a bill that would allow home growing but not a regulated market. Then that committee decided instead that a study committee would be a good idea with no legalization. Then the full House passed a bill that would provide for a roadside saliva test that looks at anyone who has the active ingredient and a lowered blood alcohol limit of 0.05. So anybody who has both marijuana and alcohol in their system would face tougher scrutiny. Then another House committee has passed a bill that would allow for limited amounts of home growing, two plants with a license, but again, no regulated market and no sales of marijuana legalized. Matt Simon, what do you think about the twists and turns this legislation has taken so far?
Well, I think somebody could probably write an entire civics book about the course of, that this one bill has taken through the Vermont legislature so far.
Or a Netflix original series.
Oh, that might get more viewers or more eyes, more interest. Certainly the process was a little easier from our perspective in the Senate, and there was a can-do attitude in that chamber.
But didn't you know the House would be harder from the start?
Oh, yeah. We've always known that, and particularly the Judiciary Committee and the Appropriations Committee. Those two committees have proven to be have a number of members who are very skeptical about this, let's just say. So it's definitely taken some twists and turns in the House. But from our perspective, the Ways and Means Amendment would remove penalties for possession of up to an ounce of marijuana for adults 21 and older. It would give them a legal way to obtain marijuana, a very limited way of just being able to grow two plants. But it would continue, it would legalize marijuana for adults, and it would have a study commission that would look at how to go about creating a regulated market. So
if that's what ends up happening, if that were to pass and that was the bill that was eventually signed by the governor, you'd be okay with that?
That would be a way of ending marijuana prohibition in Vermont. I don't think it's a final, ultimate policy. I think ultimately there needs to be a regulated market because most people won't want to grow their own, just like most people don't want to brew their own beer. So it's still going to be a need for stores, but it wouldn't they wouldn't appear right away. But I'm confident that they would follow if that is what passed.
Debbie Haskins, what about for you? You've been watching this legislation carefully as well. What do you think about how it's been going? And if this were the bill to end up getting legalized, would you be okay with that?
Well, first, I want to thank you for this opportunity to have the discussion and to continue with the complexities that I see. I want to just say that I haven't had the chance to sit in all of the committees all the time because I work two other jobs, and this is a volunteer job that I do for the executive director position, and I'm going on my second year. I have a background, just so you know, around 28 years being in the prevention and treatment field. I'm a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. And why that, I think, is relevant is it just begins to show the complexities of the twists and turns that this bill has taken. And so I think there's so much more information that needs to happen. I think there needs to be much more education. There are many flaws that we feel that are in this bill. And I just want to really say that there are a lot of myths, I think, that are out there because actually we don't have prohibition, Matt, and you know that. We have medical marijuana. We've decrimmed marijuana. We can grow hemp. But I really do
Although
appreciate...
Although hemp is a totally separate issue.
It is, and so isn't medical marijuana. I would also say that is a separate issue.
Well, but in that case, the prohibition is on the legal consumption by adults who don't have a medical license.
And one would say, according to the RAND report, if we read it carefully, that there's a population out there that is using. And we need to look at facts and figures, I think, carefully. And I think we need to think about what we're talking about. So what I'd like to see, you ask if I was, you know, for this amendment, it stands. I'm really concerned about a commission that's based mostly of people that are for legalization. I see that particular commission really should be based on doctors and certainly medical folks, prevention folks, treatment providers, people that also want to look at the science. Because I think the House is struggling with a lot of – they've done a lot of work. They've listened to a lot more testimony in some ways than I think the Senate did. And I think they need to continue to do that.
So you are in favor of a study committee. You are not in favor of the current bill as it stands at the moment, perhaps in the House, which would allow for an adult to have a license to grow two plants. That is not something that would be acceptable to you?
It would not, I don't think, at this time, because what we've heard from our law enforcement is that that is not possible to even monitor. So when we talk about regulation, much of our group, of course, is very concerned about our adolescent use. And we know that when pot is more available or any drug is more available and more accessible, more people are going to use it, which includes our youth. And what most people don't realize is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey talks about, which is the survey we use here in Vermont every 2 years, it talks about for the last few years, we have been on a pretty steady course of bringing those numbers down from where they were very high in 1997 to at 32% of monthly use for students in high school. 30-day use, it's down now to 22%. Now, that's still too high. And so what we would like to see is certainly that let's talk honestly about how we can bring those numbers down. I don't believe legalization is the way to do it.
So let me ask you honestly here, a study committee, would there be any reason to have one if your position is this is going to be – legalization would be a bad thing for Vermont youth. It should not be legalized. We should keep a prohibition in place. What's the point of having a study committee?
I think the point of having a study committee is to really look at the long-term implications of what this drug may do. Many people are saying it's either for or against legalization. And to me, it's not – that simple of a decision, because I think there's some epigenetics and some information that is certainly coming to light that may or may not be true, but we don't want to create and actually have the same mistake that we had 50 years ago when we did, or longer, with tobacco. I think we've learned from some of our science. So I think part of the work that could do is let's look at the unintentional consequences that legalizing this drug would do to Vermont. And they're huge. I mean, this would impact everything from the workforce to the roads to high schools to colleges to families to DCF. I mean, everything gets impacted by this decision. So I just want to make sure we're making a thoughtful decision.
So Matt Simon, let me ask you again, and I know I've asked you this before, but why the rush? In that case, why not try to pull in people like Debbie Haskins or, you know, if not her, if not Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont, other people who say, we just don't have to go this fast?
Well, I think it is a complex discussion. It's not as simple as flipping a light switch, as many have said, and the House and Senate have spent a lot of time trying to sort through that complexity. I think Debbie's organization is going to oppose legalization regardless of any of the complex or simplicity or whatever. The details don't matter. But back to the reality of what came out of the RAND report, we know that about 80,000 Vermonters are using marijuana regularly. About 2,500 of them are covered by the medical marijuana program. That leaves, I'm pretty bad at math, but more than 75,000 Vermonters who are using marijuana, and they have to buy it from an illicit source. They're spending maybe $175 million a year to do that, and we have no control over the product. So it is prohibition. It's just like alcohol prohibition in that regard. No, we're not criminalizing the individual who drinks a beer, but we are criminalizing the production and sale of the product, and that's what prohibition is. It empowers and enriches criminals, and that's why this is an urgent issue.
We're talking today about pot legalization, and we'd love for you to weigh in with your thoughts. You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Michael says, watching this bill go through the process of repeated testimonies in multiple committees, often repeating the same information that a layperson can get in an hour's work on Google, has led me to believe that we need a ballot initiative in this state. Far too much time has been wasted on this when other things that are just as important, if not more so, go unresolved. Of course, the states that have legalized marijuana have gone through the ballot initiative where voters weighed in, and that's not something that we have in Vermont. But Michael's saying, you know, that might be a way to solve this issue. Megan says, I'm most interested to see what happens if Massachusetts passes their recreational marijuana law this November. We're up here fighting tooth and nail, going back and forth with amendments just so people can grow two lousy pot plants. In Massachusetts, they'd be able to get 10 ounces, edibles, oils, growing up to 12 plants per household, etc. Our law may look like a joke in comparison. No edibles, 20% of the ounces allowed, two plants, etc. I think our expected tax revenue will be much lower if Massachusetts passes their law. And of course, the tax revenue only applies if the Senate bill in Vermont were to be the one that passed. Again, you can share your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Steve, calling in from Burlington. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. Hi, Steve. You there?
Hello.
Hi, I hear you.
Hi.
Hi. You got us?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Oh, looks like Steve can't
Hello.
Hear us, though we can hear him. So we'll try to get Steve back. In the meantime, plenty to talk about here with Debbie Haskins of Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont and Matt Simon with the Marijuana Policy Project. Let's look at what is being debated in the House right now, or where things stand in the House. If people are allowed to grow their own plants and consume the product however they see fit without fear of prosecution, but again, without the ability to sell it, so no regulated market, Matt Simon, that seems like an okay compromise to you, or do you think we need a regulated market?
Well, I think we need to be moving towards a regulated market, regardless of what happens this year. But if Vermont were to adopt the House Ways and Means Amendment, simply allowing two plants, that would be really just a more modest version of the policy in our nation's capital. In District of Columbia, voters voted to legalize possession and limited cultivation. Adults 21 and older are allowed to grow for themselves and share, but they aren't allowed to sell it. I think D.C. will get to a regulated market, but for now, this is giving people an alternative to buying from drug dealers.
So, in other words, this is fine with you for now, but not fine with you forever. And share your argument for why eventually we need to have this regulated market. Why can't this just be sort of a product that's a little bit more in limbo than some other things?
Well, it may be more in limbo than some other things, but the benefits of a regulated market are really I think it takes maybe going to a state where it's legal and walking into a retail store to understand how stark of a difference we're talking about here. In Vermont, 80,000 people buy marijuana now by calling somebody up. That person shows up with a plastic bag full of green plant material. The consumer doesn't know whether that's got heavy metals in it, pesticides, molds. Doesn't know whether the THC content's 3% or 15%. Doesn't really know anything about it other than it either smells good or doesn't or whatever. And that's the basis on which consumers are making choices right now in Vermont. If you walk into a retail store in Colorado or Washington, you find that all the products are labeled, that they've been tested, that you know the cannabinoid profile. Most people in a prohibition state don't even know what a cannabinoid profile is, but it's the percentage of the THC, the percentage of CBD, the percentage of the other cannabinoids that contribute to the product. And as people are trying to use this product more healthfully, allowing them to do it, purchase it in a regulated environment instead of from an illicit drug dealer is very important.
But
and
if you grow your own, it's the same way that when you grow your own carrots, you know what's in your soil. Presumably, you're taking some more of the responsibility on for yourself. So it's not the same as just saying it's the black market versus a regulated market. This again would be a more of a middle ground.
That's right, and we've heard from patients in Vermont and elsewhere for many years. They don't. In some cases, don't trust the dispensaries. They want to be able to grow their own plants because they know exactly what's in it.
And I want to be clear, this is not a product as other carrot products and other maple syrup products, which is what I've heard it compared to many times. This is a psychotropic drug that has a lot of chemicals that most people smoke. And yet about a third of our youth are actually using vape pens and electronic means, which changes the potency and it changes the way in which it's ingested into the system. I think it's important for Vermonters to understand that as this moves forward, what we're talking about is commercialization, opening the door for edibles, opening the door for some things that are clearly not good for our health. When we talk about the
But why does that open the door, Debbie, given that that stuff, as you just said, is already happening within the black market? So if somebody's buying marijuana now from a dealer, they can still turn it into edibles or put it in a vape pen.
They certainly can, and we've seen some of that with the butane hash oil explosions in Winooski, and we've seen some throughout Vermont, and there's certainly some folks that are doing it. And that's always going to be a small population. But what the biggest way that kids and people get it, I keep hearing drug dealers, and I worked in the field for 30 years. Drug dealers are sometimes our parents. And what I mean by that, just like let's go back to alcohol. Alcohol is a highly regulated drug. And at point of sale, we don't allow our kids to get in and get it and buy it. And Vermont does a fantastic job in doing that. What happens is adults bring it home just like tobacco and kids use it. And that's the drug that we struggle with on our roadways that's regulated, which kills more people, along with tobacco, also regulated. Neither of which do we tax enough to get the monies we need to pay for the societal implications. I'm concerned that we're going to open up the door to another drug that while some will say, oh, it doesn't kill, it has an impact to the mental capacities of adults and youth. And so when I think about young people getting access to marijuana, the kids that have been buying it for the last 15 or 20 years that have talked to me and that we talk about in the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, a lot of them are getting it from their parents because it's available and it's easy to get. Okay, so it'll be great. They'll know exactly what they're getting. They'll know how much, what's in it. It's regulated. But we're going to make it accessible to not only adolescents, but to all age populations, more availability, more use, more people on the road impaired, more people in the workplace impaired. This is what this is about, is pushing impairment, pushing addiction.
We have more to get to, and I'm going to come back to you both, but let's see if we've got Steve back on the line, able to hear us in Burlington. Hi, Steve. Can you hear me? Hi. Go right ahead.
Am I on now?
You're on now.
Okay. I like the idea of not letting big business take over the cultivation of marijuana and the sale of it. And that idea of each person having two plants is attractive, but as the guests had mentioned, it doesn't work for everyone. Would any of the proposals now allow for co-ops or CSAs to grow for people?
Steve, thanks for
your call.
In other
words, your two plants would be two shares in the CSA and then...
Yep, Steve, I hear what you're saying. Matt Simon, my understanding is that that's not in... In at least the House-designed bill at the moment. I mean, maybe you could eventually have a co-op through the Senate plan, but no, that's not in there anywhere at the moment, is there, Matt?
No. That's correct. It was talked about by the Senate Government Operations Committee during its hearings last year. It was one of the options that they looked at, and I think the issue there has just been that nobody's really come forward with a comprehensive way that it would completely work to be able to regulate. I mean, there's a desire to have this be a regulated and controlled product. The Senate bill reflects that interest. They didn't want to treat marijuana like a tomato. They didn't want it to be like something that would show up in your CSA. So going from having marijuana basically in the same category as heroin currently and trying to move it to the tomato category is something that most people are not going to be comfortable with. So we're trying to create a category similar to alcohol, at least is my our organization's goal, where adults 21 and older are able to access it legally, but we're making the best efforts possible to keep it away from young people.
More to come on this issue as we discuss whether or not marijuana should be legalized in Vermont and what legalization might actually look like given the way things are going in Montpelier. We're hearing from a lot of you as well. Hal says, I sincerely hope reason trumps tax revenue, but I have my doubts. Dean says there is no ethical reason to rush into a cobbled-together camel of a bill created by half a dozen committees. Vermont can do a lot better by starting a prevention program that isn't tied to legalization while studying the legal states for ideas after the full results of their legalization efforts are clear. And L. Lundeen says legalization of marijuana is an issue of freedom and self-determination. People over 21 should have the right to determine if they want to use cannabis. Many people are very disappointed that the Vermont legislature has moved away from the original thoughts about legalization. Your thoughts about legalization, go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. You can write them down, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are talking about the issue of marijuana legalization from the framework of the many twists and turns the legislation addressing this issue has been taking in Montpelier. We are talking with Debbie Haskins, Executive Director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont, and with Matt Simon, New England Political Director for the Marijuana Policy Project. And we're hearing from many of you who feel strongly about this issue, some of you who have some questions. You can join the DIN, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let's get a few more callers in here. Ben's on the line with us from North Hero. Hi, Ben. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What are your thoughts?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. You're very faint, so I'm sorry. That's why I asked. I just wanted to say that I hope your listeners know that Jan Wright, who's the deputy police chief in Burlington, went out to Denver last month and spent 3 days in Colorado seeing how legalization had gone there. And she came back and reported that the use of marijuana had increased dramatically. It's used more frequently now than in any other state in the country. The number of people being killed by drivers under the influence of marijuana has gone up, and hospitalizations have increased. It's really a pretty grim picture. When she came back, I do a little public affairs show on Channel 17 in Burlington, and I interviewed her there. And I hope your listeners get a chance to see that, because I think Jan is a real good sort, and she gave a lot of good information.
Ben, thanks for your call. Appreciate your perspective and your insight, having interviewed the deputy police chief in Burlington. We'll look that up. Let's go to Robert in Morrisville. Hi, Robert. What's your perspective?
Hello?
Hi, Robert. Are you hearing me? Looks like nobody can hear me today, but
yes,
can you?
I am.
Okay, go right ahead.
I'm curious, really a few comments. I can't believe in 2016 that we're still having a debate about legalization of marijuana for adults. The present prohibition system does nothing but enrich drug cartels, enriches people who murder and maim other people to control these cartels, does nothing to protect children or minors from marijuana, does nothing to protect the health of people that use marijuana for altered or corrupted product. I find absolutely no value in further study. It's just nonsense. The representatives need to step up, legalize marijuana in a responsible way for adults, and then be extremely tough on making sure it doesn't fall into the use of children. The present system accomplishes nothing except enriches criminals. I'll take my answer off the air.
Robert, thanks for the call. I'm going to get one in here before we come back to our guests. Isaiah's in Montpelier. Hi, Isaiah. Your thoughts.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, go right ahead, Isaiah.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What are your thoughts today?
So I just wanted to comment on this woman that was speaking earlier in the show, and she mentioned that she was worried about consumption of marijuana and use going up because it's been going down and they wanted to keep it that way. But actually, there's studies show in Colorado, consumption of marijuana and use has gone down since they legalized it. And I think that we should take that into consideration in Vermont.
Isaiah, thanks for your call. I appreciate hearing that. You think that legalizing it would not necessarily increase teens but might drop it. My understanding of the situation in Colorado is that statistically it's fairly similar, although Colorado did go up in the rankings in terms of teen youth or youth risk, youth use, in terms of being a state with really high rates, but pretty small, pretty on the margins there. But regardless, we've got a couple of different perspectives here on both pro and con. Debbie Haskins, you know, there are some people who are saying this isn't going to increase the allure for teens, like Isaiah. And in fact, you mentioned the cigarette issue for teens as an issue that we still struggle with. And it's true, we do. But we've also seen education and prevention efforts being very successful for teens for a product that is, at least until the legislature decides this session, legal for people 18 and over, but illegal for young people. And there has been a great amount of success in Vermont in curbing teen smoking use. Why not use that model, legalize marijuana, but still focus on prevention for young people?
Well, I think we need to remember a couple things about tobacco, specifically here in Vermont, that 3,000 people in the nation die every year still because of this particular drug. And what did Vermont do? We were part of a class action suit that actually received a tremendous amount of money. Over the course of the last 10 years, we have been using that money to provide prevention. So for those folks that don't know about prevention, is you need to put it in place a good 10 years to see the results of what's going to happen. And some would say 15 years. In Vermont, we took out billboards. We took out vending machines. We put the product behind. We actually made cards for people that you could only go in if you had a card. We changed a whole lot of what we call environmental procedures in order to make it happen. And yet it's still an issue and people still die from it. So our concern is that if we're going to do prevention on this, and this would be true for any prevention program, not just for marijuana, but if we're going to do it for alcohol and marijuana, that we need to put that in place. We need to see it solid and in our budgets now. And by the way, it was cut out 4 years ago to a line item here at the legislative level, and now they want to put it back in at a token amount. So I think we need to really look at what we're trying to change. So our youth levels are one piece that we certainly want to change, but we also want to think about how is this going to impact the rest of the population when it's not just youth using. It's going to be other people using that are in high-risk jobs. And what I consider a high-risk job is someone maybe even driving a bus, my surgeon. I'm going to be concerned about adults, not just youth using. And I want to make sure that whatever we do, we're not cobbling something together just to say that we've passed a bill here in Vermont.
Matt, Simon, where do you stand on this issue? Because whether marijuana is legal or not, frankly, there's an issue with impairment on the roads, and there's an issue with people who perhaps shouldn't be impaired doing things while they are impaired. How do you address that, given that legalization does open up new avenues for people?
Yeah, I see it similarly to a lot of these other questions. The real question to me is, can we deal with the impaired driving issue more effectively under prohibition or under a regulated market? And there are many advantages of having a regulated system. One is that you can do direct-to-the-consumer education. Currently, illicit drug dealers are selling the product and doing no consumer education. If they are educating people, it might be to tell them it's harmless or that it'll cure the common cold. Who knows what people are learning? Now, if we're selling it in regulated stores, the Department of Health can give people information directly, plus they'll have tax revenue. People may have the impression that the Senate bill was all about a money grab, but every dime in the Senate bill would go to prevention, education, and enforcement and regulation. It's not for the general fund. The Senate saw it as a way to be proactive about Vermont's entire drug problem, including impaired driving, including opioid and opiate addiction and abuse, et cetera. It's great to say we want prevention and education, but there's no way to fund it without having a product that you can tax.
Ruth is calling in from Pulteney. Hi, Ruth. Go ahead. Ruth, are you there? Are you hearing me?
I am hearing you.
Go right ahead.
Hi. All right. So I'm listening to what everybody is saying right now. I am a card-carrying medical cannabis patient. I am unable to utilize my card because of the $400 per ounce cost. Now, for me to be able to grow on my own property by myself, that is what I need to be able to do so that I can stay off of narcotics and have a good quality of life. So while everybody is making very valid arguments here on the show, you know, I have to ask, what is their personal experience? You know, are they somebody perhaps who has been through cancer such as I have, with bone issues and bone pain? And do they know what it's like to have to resort to narcotics, which have very negative effects, when I know that there's a natural remedy out there that I should be able to utilize as my own choice? Do they know that there are many different strains?
Ruth, are you on the medical marijuana registry? Do you mind if I ask?
I am, absolutely. Yes, I am.
So you can grow your own through the medical marijuana registry, right? So why does the legalization of recreational matter to you?
Choice. I can grow two plants inside in a room that would cost me upwards of $3,000 to build. That's, I don't have that kind of income. I need to be able to do this outside. I can purchase from the dispensary. You don't have a choice. You can either do one or you can do the other.
And it's too expensive from the dispensary? Is that why that's not a good option
it's
for you?
It's $400 an ounce from the dispensary, whether it's a tincture or it's an edible or it's a flower. Yes.
Okay, so Ruth's saying, you know, this would open up some new avenues for her, despite being able to be on the medical marijuana registry. Matt Simon, what do you think?
Well, I'm grateful to Ruth for calling in. I've been advocating for nearly the last decade for patients in New Hampshire and Vermont and other states to have legal access to medical cannabis. And it's easy to pass a law and say, oh, we've already got medical. You don't need that. The question is, are these laws working well for patients? And Vermont's laws is a very restrictive law that a lot of patients are not able to qualify for. Those who are able to qualify for it and have to make what I think is a very irrational choice between growing two plants, as Ruth described, in an indoor room or buying from one of four dispensaries. This is a program that could be more patient-friendly in many ways. It excludes patients who have PTSD, chronic pain. It's much easier to be prescribed opioids in Vermont still than it is to be certified for the medical cannabis problem. And I hope that will change regardless of what happens with legalization.
And Debbie Haskins, your thoughts? Ruth was asking, you know, for your experience.
Specifically, I want to thank Ruth for calling in because she brought up two things that she asked about. One was specific, do I know about pain and chronic pain? And I absolutely do. And I understand not wanting to take opiates. I'm a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, and I know about addiction, and I know where those can take you. So I think we need to look at our medical marijuana laws again, which is not what this bill is about for all Vermonters. I think we also, if we had time, could do another entire show on the medical benefits of what the medical community and our insurances aren't covering, period, meaning acupuncture, massage, all kinds of alternative therapies to pain, because there are many, because I've explored them. So, Ruth, I would hope that, you know, with your doctor, you can figure out a different plan and that maybe we can revisit the medical marijuana conversation as well.
Interesting to note, we had the health commissioner, Dr. Harry Chen, on the program last week talking about an opioid bill moving through the legislature and that might regulate how many pills a patient could have after a minor procedure. And one of the things that's currently in that legislation is a look specifically at acupuncture. You can go back and find that program if you're interested in that particular issue. Debbie Haskins, do you think it's likely that anything is going to pass this session? I mean, we've seen all these twists and turns. House Speaker Shap Smith has said he's not sure anything can make it through the House and then be reconciled with the Senate version by the end of the session. So do you think that anything's going to pass?
I actually hope not, because it's too up in the air. There's too many questions. Now it's all about deals and conversations behind doors and not really about the issue. I really would like us to do something thoughtful before we open the door to do something. But I'm not a betting lady, so I'm not going to bet on this one either way.
Matt Simon, are you going to bet?
I'm not going to bet. I think that Vermonters should be proud of the process that their legislators have followed. In other states, it's taken a ballot measure passing to get legislators to even have these conversations. In Vermont, they've been very proactive for the last couple of years. It started years ago. And I think Vermont legislators know more than any other state's legislators about this issue. I think anything they do, if they do something, will be cautious, phased in, and something that can be adjusted each year as needed. So I hope we do move forward.
Well, stay with VPR. We'll be sure to update you as soon as we know if something happens, when something happens, and what's moving around in the meantime. Debbie Haskins is Executive Director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont. Matt Simon is New England Political Director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a Vermont celebrity from the 1850s is finally getting her due in an extensively researched biographical novel. We'll talk with the author who's found special communion with spiritualist Axa Sprague. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The best-known native of Vermont's Plymouth Notch is probably President Calvin Coolidge. But if you visit the little graveyard in the village, someone else's grave is arguably more intriguing. At the bottom of the stone slab is the inscription, "I Still Live." This is the final resting place, maybe, of Axa Sprague. She was a national celebrity in the years leading up to the Civil War, an abolitionist and activist for women's rights, but first and foremost a spiritualist. Sprague claimed to commune with angels and the dead, and she entranced large audiences across the country who came to listen to her speak. Sprague is the subject of a new historical novel published by the Vermont Historical Society. It's called 7 Years of Grace, The Inspired Mission of Axa W. Sprague. And it's by author Sarah Rath, who spent years researching her subject. She's joining us today from Wisconsin. Sarah, what a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Jane.
This woman had a difficult life. It was quite short. I think she died before her 35th birthday. And she spent something like 7 years in her 20s in bed with what sounds like arthritis and rheumatic fever. But between those 7 years in bed and her death in 1862, she made quite a name for herself. Can you tell us who Axa Sprague was?
Sure. It's interesting that you were just having a discussion about chronic pain because she came down with what was probably rheumatoid arthritis when she was 20, and she was confined to a darkened room for the next 7 years. But then she prayed and she wrote poetry and claimed that when she was between 26 and 27, she was visited by angels, and they cured her of this disease, but they gave her a mission. They charged her with a mission to travel and tell of her recovery and the message of spiritualism that we do not die. So she kept a diary and wrote poems about this experience, and her first public lecture was in 1854 in South Reading. And after that, she spent the rest of her life traveling the country as a trance lecturer, meaning spirit spoke through her. She stood on the stage by herself, entranced, with her eyes closed, and the words that came out of her mouth were supposedly not her words, but the words of spirit, and they encouraged people to believe in the fact that you can contact the spirits of the dead. And she had huge audiences of thousands of people. I don't know how she managed to have them hear her, although she often suffered from something called minister's sore throat, and I can imagine that that was from trying to project her voice. But she traveled throughout New England and Providence, Rhode Island, and then Connecticut, Philadelphia, New York, upstate New York, eventually Chicago, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Memphis, all prior to the Civil War and all by herself, which was practically unheard of.
You know, that's interesting in some ways because in some ways, the thing that was the most scandalous was that this was a woman traveling by herself and being so independent. Not that she was communing with the dead and speaking, you know, through having other people speak through her to these audiences. Can you contextualize spiritualism and being a medium in the day?
Sure. Well, for one thing, it was scandalous for a woman to appear on stage, and to appear on stage alone was pretty scandalous, and to be on stage with your eyes closed and in a trance, that allowed men in the audience to emotionally, psychologically undress you. It was a horrible thing, and she knew she was being criticized for what she wore and how her hair was fixed, and she just closed all of that off.
What was she wearing?
Well, I imagine the fashions of the day, but the picture on the cover of the book, the dress certainly looks like it was homemade. The lace collar is kind of crooked, and the pleats are not perfect.
We should say she's not showing any skin. I mean, she was not scandalous.
No, I don't think she showed skin. No, but just for a woman to be on stage, you know, actresses, actors, they were all thought to be pretty weird, pretty subject to criticism.
Hmm.
So spiritualism was a religious movement that grew out of a variety of religious revivals that swept through New England in the early 19th century, along with Millerism and Seventh-day Adventism and Mormons and Shakers. And it aimed at proving the immortality of the soul by establishing this communication with spirits. And by mid-century, it was quite pervasive, and it still exists now. People may not realize that. Your listeners may not realize that. But there are still spiritualist churches throughout the United States. And Lilydale, New York, the Lilydale Assembly is now in its 136th year, and it offers a variety of mediums to choose from if you want to visit them and have them contact someone in your past. It's a very peaceful setting for contemplation, and they have demonstrations of clairvoyance and spiritual healing. And that's where I first learned about Axis Sprague.
So let me ask you, are you a spiritualist? Are you a medium?
No. Well, I had taken a class in the personal development of mediumship, but that was only out of curiosity. I'm a writer. You become very inquisitive about a lot of different things when you're a writer or when you do what you do. And that's an opportunity to reach out and learn about a whole variety of things that the average person probably doesn't feel comfortable doing. But I must say, after studying about AXA and what she did, I don't discount it. I do feel that there is an ability to contact those who have gone before. I guess I don't know if that makes me a spiritualist, but I don't deny it.
Well, it might also give you more of a desire to see AXA Sprague get her due, given that she was such a large figure in the 1850s, and yet, at least in Vermont, where she was from, it doesn't seem like people know her today. Why don't you think she's a name that's very well known?
Well, they certainly knew her then because she wrote for a lot of newspapers in the state. She wrote for the Banner of Light, which was published in Boston and was circulated throughout the country. She wrote for the Green Mountain Freeman and for the Vermont Spiritualist, and she spoke all throughout the state. I mean, every little community demanded that she come. I mean, truly demanded. They would send her a letter and say, "We want you here, and at what time?" So in the 1850s, she was extremely popular. You say, why wasn't she more popular now?
Why don't people know about her now, do you think?
Well, she died prior to the Civil War. She died at the age of 34, and there was a book published after her death that contained her poetry and a story about her life that her mother published. But, you know, after the Civil War, people had a lot of other things on their minds. And after the Civil War, there were other mediums who became more outspoken and better known, and they were much more flamboyant. She was actually quite modest in her persona.
You know, you, in researching this book, which took you many years and led you through twists and turns,
yes,
you were searching the whole time, it sounds like, for AXA Sprague's original diary, because you could find excerpts in other people's writings, but what was between the ellipses was sometimes the most intriguing for you. And I understand that you almost got your hands on her diary and didn't. Can you just tell us that story?
Sure. In 1941, a man named Leonard Twinnum had published excerpts from AXA's diary in the Vermont Historical Society's Proceedings, which is a publication that came out then several times a year, and I believe still does. And he did this in two different versions, one in September and one in December. They were excerpts from her diary, and he had purchased these in a bookstore in Rutland. I suppose it was Tuttle's Bookstore, which handled rare books, along with a box of other materials, and he edited them. And he was also a minister, and there are a lot of ellipses in there, and that means stuff is taken out. And as a researcher, I am dying to know what he edited out. What if it was a bunch of good stuff that would have made my book a lot more colorful, or if it was just for the sake of being more concise. So I looked everywhere. I got really impulsive obsessed about this search. And finally, a couple of years ago, it popped up on eBay, of all places. And Paul Carnahan, who's the librarian at the Vermont Historical Society, and I made separate bids on this. We couldn't believe it. We were just absolutely stunned because I had used a psychic, I had used a clairvoyant, I had researched all of the libraries in the country that carried diaries and so forth. I mean, I was tireless in my research. And we made so many bids on this, and it sold for $5,000. So we couldn't do that. And we have no idea who purchased it. We've not been able to contact them. I hope maybe with the publication of this book they'll come forth.
Well, I hope so, too, for your sake. Nonetheless, tons of research in this book, including new information about Axa Sprague. The book is called 7 Years of Grace, The Inspired Mission of Axa W. Sprague. It's published by the Vermont Historical Society. Sarah Rath is the author, and she'll be in Vermont in June for several events, including in Plymouth Notch on June 12th, when a state historic marker will be dedicated to Axa Sprague. Sarah, thank you so much for talking with us.
I'd like to add just one small thing.
Make it quick.
Yes, I will. Spiritualists were in favor of free love, and Axa despised it, but she became unintentionally involved with a married man, and that adds a lot of passion to the second half of the book.
Good. Well, if that's not a tease, I don't know what is. Thanks very much to Sarah Rath.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Listeners, I want to let you know tomorrow's show is all about immigration, legal immigration. We've been hearing a lot about EB-5 visas. That is just one of the ways legally people can enter this country. We're going to tell you all of the very complicated ways and discuss legal immigration tomorrow on Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.